On this week's edition of New York Now, Governor Andrew Cuomo reveals his plan to fill a projected $6 billion gap in the state budget. We'll have a reaction from top lawmakers.
It's not a zero-sum game. There is going to be somebody who's going to be affected. I don't know how you can possibly say with a straight face that there'll be no effect on local governments or beneficiaries.
State Controller Tom DiNapoli joins us with his take on Cuomo's proposal and his thoughts on the state's economy. And the Reporters Roundtable is here to break it all down. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.
Today, the Senate majority will pass
legislation that will prohibit it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. Governor Andrew Cuomo finally unveiled his plan this week to fill a projected $6 billion deficit in the state budget, and he says he can do it without affecting taxpayers or the state's healthcare system. The proposal was part of Cuomo's annual state budget address, which he delivered in Albany this week. We'll have details on that in just a bit. But first, we have our Casey Seiler here from the Times Union. He's with me in studio for a special announcement. Thanks
for
being here, Casey.
It's good to be here.
So the TU announced this week that you are going to be replacing Rex Smith as the new editor.
Not replacing him, succeeding him.
Succeeding him. Sorry. Rex will still be at the TU in an editor at large role.
Yes.
Congratulations, first off. That's awesome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's a great honor. It's very humbling to succeed somebody like Rex, who has been the editor at the Times Union for about 18 years now. A remarkable run. What's more remarkable is the skill and the creativity he brought to that job, always fighting for the journalists, fighting for resources within the institution, and fighting, you know, the organizations and powerful individuals outside of it as well. So it's a real honor, and I'm very excited to do it. I've been at the Times Union for 20 years now, which is, as you well know, in journalism these days, people move from job to job and place to place. But I've always felt rooted there, and it's very, very exciting.
And when I first met you, you were the bureau chief at the state capitol when I was there working for another publication at the time.
Yeah. Rex, in 2008, thought it would be a good idea to turn the Times Union's entertainment editor into its capitol bureau chief, which, for people who do not know how newspapers work, is something of a quantum leap, you know, in subject matter. And I always think of that as kind of the bellwether change in my career that probably kept me in journalism. Not long after getting that position, I started doing New York Now. It's been exciting, and I look forward to continue to contribute here.
Well, we love having you here. Congratulations again. Casey, we'll see you in just a bit. Turning back now to Cuomo's state budget address this week, he revealed an ambitious plan in Albany to spend about $178 billion to keep the state running into next year. During the address, he proposed a major shift in funding for education and repeated his support for legalizing marijuana this year.
This is an exciting budget. Are you excited? Oh, you should be. Watch how the state turns out at the end of this one.
When Governor Andrew Cuomo started his 10th annual budget address in Albany Tuesday, no one knew his plans to fill a projected $6.1 billion deficit. One theory, he'd help bridge the gap by shifting more of the state's Medicaid spending back to counties. That would force them to shoulder a higher cost for the government-run health care program. Others predicted Cuomo would cut services available under Medicaid. But neither happened. Instead, Cuomo said the state would convene a panel of experts to find more than $2 billion in savings from the Medicaid program. He'd slow the growth of state spending to make up the rest. That, he said, means no cuts to Medicaid or any other state programs.
You say deficit, and they say, ooh, you're going to have to cut. No, you're going to have to reduce the rate of growth. And that's exactly what we have done in this budget.
But the plan came with a catch. If counties raise property taxes too much, they could be on the hook for a larger part of their Medicaid costs. If counties keep spending tight, they could get an infusion of cash from the state as a sort of reward.
It allows us to still pay the entire cost, but it gives them an accountability and financial incentives in how it's run.
A panel called the Medicaid Redesign Team will be looking at ways to find efficiencies in the Medicaid program. Cuomo said there won't be any surprises for local governments or Medicaid beneficiaries. But Republicans weren't buying it. Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan said he's not optimistic that Cuomo's plan will solve the state's fiscal problems.
I don't know how you can say there'll be no effect on local governments, no effect on beneficiaries. That means it's got to come from somewhere. That means you're going to decimate hospitals and nursing homes. It's not a zero-sum game. There is going to be somebody who's going to be affected.
Cuomo's plan, as proposed, would take a big chunk of the spending problem away from the legislature and hand it to the Medicaid redesign team. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, a Democrat from Westchester, said after Cuomo's address that top lawmakers will want to be involved in whatever the state ends up doing with Medicaid.
We are all focused on making sure that we continue to meet the health needs of New Yorkers. So it matters how we manage the growth and, of course, the waste, the fraud, the abuse. Nobody's interested in having any of that continue. So I'm sure that's got to be a focal point.
Aside from Medicaid, the largest spending struggle in the state budget every year involves education, specifically how much to increase funding for the state schools. Cuomo is proposing a 3% increase in spending on education. That's less than previous years under his administration. He also said the state should come up with a new formula for awarding what's called foundation aid to school districts. The legislature typically shoots high in education spending every year in hopes of landing somewhere higher than Cuomo's proposal. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, a Democrat from the Bronx, said they'll do the same this year.
We always start off with wanting schools to get funding. That's always been one of our main issues, so having funding going to schools and funding going to high-needs districts, that's always been an assembly mainstay. So hearing the governor speak about foundation aid and the importance of foundation aid is music to our ears.
Cuomo also said he'll try again this year to legalize marijuana in New York for adult use. He made the same promise last year, but Democrats in the legislature couldn't agree on a final bill. The conflict is largely over where the money that comes from marijuana sales will go. Many lawmakers think it should be directly invested in communities of color, where the state's drug laws have had a stronger impact than other areas. Hastie said Democrats in the assembly are united on that front and aren't planning to budge.
You don't just want to have an economic plan. You also have to have a social plan. And like I said, there's been communities, particularly communities of color, that were really over-policed, over-incarcerated. And I think that we don't just have to send an economic message to the state. We have to send a social message that we know that that was wrong, and I think we have to make those communities whole.
Cuomo and members of the legislature will now hold hearings and meet behind closed doors over the next 2 months to come to a final agreement on the state budget, which is due at the end of March.
That's what government does. And that's what this government does. We make progress happen. And people know it. And we do it together. And we're going to do it again this year. Thank you and God bless you.
As you can see, lawmakers are still digesting Cuomo's proposed budget. After the speech, we sat down with State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli to chat about Cuomo's plan, as well as the state's economy as a whole. DiNapoli's office is responsible for monitoring state spending, and as he told us, they already have a few ideas to save money on Medicaid. Comptroller DiNapoli, thank you so much for joining us here on New York Now.
You're having
a great new year.
Yeah, so far so good. A challenging new year, but a good new year.
I can imagine. So we saw the governor's budget address this week. First, I just want to ask you generally, your general takeaways from the governor's speech this week.
Well, it's an ambitious agenda, as we've come to expect from Governor Cuomo. And certainly, I think he hit on many key points that a lot of New Yorkers will be very supportive of. The climate agenda, a very important issue, I think, to everyone in New York. Emphasis on infrastructure investment, also an area where it was, you know, an older and aging state. We obviously have many infrastructure needs that continue, and he's had many successes there. And also a plan to deal with the gap, the budget gap that's there, the $6 billion. As with any presentation that's more broad stroke, you know, the devil's in the details. And what's been going on since the announcement is, and we're doing it certainly here at the controller's office, is really trying to read the fine print about what is the follow-up to that budget message in terms of the real dollars and cents.
Right. To me, looking at what he was saying yesterday, the plan that he was laying out, it seemed like he was kind of putting the rest of it, there wasn't a clear in the details kind of thing. Everything is kind of pushed to, we're going to make this decision down the road.
Yeah.
So one part of it is that the Medicaid redesign team is going to find $2.5 billion in savings in 2 months. Is that even possible from a fiscal perspective?
Well, you've got some seasoned folks involved with that. And, you know, certainly to have it headed by Michael Dowling and Dennis Rivera,
right,
come from different perspectives on healthcare, but both very knowledgeable, very experienced in the ways of Albany, and I think very practical in terms of coming up with solutions. So, you know, to the extent that the expectation is they'll come up with some broad stroke recommendations, I do think it's possible. That being said, getting it done in time for April 1st, but really hopefully before April 1st, because some of what they may recommend might involve legislative action.
Right.
So you need to have the legislature part of that discussion as well. So I think, unless it's going to all be administrative, they really need to come in ahead of that time. It's a very tight time frame, no doubt about it.
So has your office identified any ways that the state could save some money on the Medicaid program?
We have as an ongoing priority audits of the Medicaid program. In fact, if you look at our audits over the past 3 years, we've identified cost savings opportunities, revenue generating opportunities to the tune of about $1 billion a year, $3 billion over the last 3 years. You know, the challenge that we have is we do audits and we make recommendations, but our audits don't have the force of law. So we can't compel the Department of Health to implement what we recommend. But we have found some recurring themes in terms of some of the weaknesses in how Medicaid is handled, people being duly enrolled, for example, in fee-for-service and Medicaid managed care as well, not adequately fully realizing the benefit of rebates that we can participate in. So, you know, what I've said when people have asked, the first place the Medicaid redesign team should look is to our audits, because I think there's some real opportunities there. And we're not just talking about a small amount of money. As I said, $1 billion a year for the past 3 years, that's some real money, a real opportunity for savings.
Is it a problem of Medicaid fraud, or is it just kind of double billing?
Yeah.
What are we looking at here in terms of the big cost that could be cut?
It's a good question. I think there's certainly some fraud, and you know, our office focuses on that, the Medicaid Inspector General, the Attorney General's office. There are a lot of folks involved with the fraud end, and there is some of that. But I think more typically what we found has really been inefficiency, weaknesses in the software that's meant to pick up situations of double billing or inappropriate billing that have resulted in increased costs. So I think there's a lot on the administrative side of the efficiency of the program that can be realized. Unfortunately, there is always a case of people actually ripping off the system, and more typically it's providers rather than, you know, the recipients of the service. So there's certainly more effort. We're going to redouble our efforts in terms of the audit work that we do, and we hope that the Department of Health will take seriously what we recommend.
Well, the governor was saying yesterday is that maybe local governments should start holding the line a little bit more on enrolling people in Medicaid, that kind of spending there. And if not, they may have to pay some extra money in terms of what they're paying in their share of Medicaid. Is that something that you've looked at before? Are local governments, can they find efficiencies, or is this more of like a state situation?
Well, the ground rules are set by the state. So, you know, it was interesting what he laid out, and that's a perfect example of the devil's in the details. What will that really mean for local governments? If they're not setting the ground rules, what kind of parameters can they really implement at the local level? Plus, he used a 3% figure in terms of keeping growth within 3%. You've got some counties where already they exceed 3% growth. In fact, New York City, I think, tweeted something out shortly after that announcement. So
yeah,
if that number is not realistic, are we going to shift the cost burden to the local level? And I think that's what the counties particularly are looking at, because it's the county level that would be impacted by this. And, you know, the other piece for counties outside of New York City, it also said that you must stay within the tax cap as well.
Exactly.
So if you got other cost factors driving your issue and your Medicaid increases because you, let's say you have a high enrollment, you have a lot of people now enrolling that weren't enrolled before, are going to exceed that 3% figure, what's going to happen? How are you going to pay for it? And so, you know, I think there's still a lot of questions with that. My guess is you will hear from the county officials a lot of concern. But yeah, I think, again, we need to see exactly how this will play out, and that's
right.
Why, you know, he laid something out there, but we need to really see the fine print, and the legislature still has to weigh in.
And hopefully at the end of the 3 months from now, we'll have kind of a very clear defined solution to fill that.
Well,
deficit.
We have to. But
exactly.
Let's also look at this. You know, the governor has the 30-day amendment period where he could change his proposal. So if we do have some reaction to the fine print.
The comptroller's office, you mean?
No, the 30-day, well, we'll have our analysis, sure. Yeah. But even more importantly, the stakeholders, you know, whether it be providers or the counties or advocates for, you know, for patients, they may have some initial reactions that perhaps there could even be some adjustments even earlier than that April 1st deadline.
I think kind of an overarching theme that we have here is that we're in a spot right now where the national economy is actually going very strong. We have a very strong economy there. But what does it say that the state is now facing this $6 billion budget deficit with the national economy being how it is?
Well, the state's economy is still strong because we're still in a growth mode even in terms of this budget. I think the governor pointed that out. When, you know, we're talking about a shortfall based on projected growth. But I think what it does indicate is that New York has made some very significant spending commitments. And as we always point out, we get a budget done, but there are always structural gaps that are built in that we never seem to deal with. And then on top of it, this year you have this much, much higher than expected expense of Medicaid. So you've got the structural budget gap that was there to begin with. You have an unexpected increase in Medicaid expenditures. Hence, you come up with a multi-billion dollar gap, which is something we really haven't had to face for a while. So I think certainly from a statewide perspective, not that there aren't some weaknesses when you drill down region by region, the state's economy is still strong. It's still in a recovery mode. We're benefiting from that. But, you know, at some point, history tells us the business cycle will go in the other direction, which is why one of the things that we've put out there, even with all these challenges, and we haven't even talked about school aid, that's another piece of a local government impact.
Huge piece.
You know, it's huge. But we need to build up our reserves. Our rainy day reserves are way behind what other states do, particularly larger states. And that's not meant to deal with a short-term gap like we're dealing with now. It's really meant to say when we have that economic downturn, what can we draw upon to get us through that tough time? And New York hasn't done an adequate job in that area.
Comptroller DiNapoli, thank you so much for joining us this week on New York Now.
Thank you.
All right, and now for some analysis of the week's news. We're at the Reporters Roundtable, where I'm happy to be joined by my friends Jesse McKinley from the New York Times and Bill Mahoney from Politico. Thanks very much for coming in.
For sure.
All right, we've heard the governor's budget plan. The big question, of course, is will the recommendations for closing the Medicaid gap be sufficient? We're talking about a significant gap. The governor has said that he wants to supercharge and reintroduce the Medicaid redesign team that was a mechanism from early in his tenure. Is that going to be enough?
Well, I think it's already done, quite frankly. I mean, I think the Medicaid redesign team was basically cooked from the time it was announced. I think that the governor knows exactly what he wants them to do. I think there will be some fairly serious discussion about tightening eligibility requirements, particularly in places like New York City, which of course makes the bulk of Medicaid payments as well as the bulk of the beneficiaries. So, you know, and you look at the people that he named to run this, the head of a hospital union, the head of a healthcare union, you start to see that perhaps there has been some backroom discussions as to what has to happen. Now, that being said, the tough sell here is going to be whether or not they can convince counties that it's all their fault and that they should rein in spending. You know, you talk to healthcare economists, year after year, healthcare costs go up and up and up. You know, there's they outstrip inflation year after year. So to ask them to hold it within 3% mm-hmm. and then also say you're going to have to cover the overage, I think that's going to be the toughest sell of this.
One thing that's interesting about this is this continues a trend we've seen in past budgets in terms of these independent commissions. This isn't one that has the power to change laws like other ones we've seen. But this is one where the blame could be pointed to. If these counties are unhappy, if people who currently get some benefits who might not be able to going forward are unhappy, the governor doesn't need to say it was his idea. The legislators don't need to say it was their idea. Because of this massive budget deficit, this commission had to come up with stuff, and it's this commission's fault, and they're the ones who should absorb most of the blame. And we've seen this time and again. And like I said, it's not quite the same in terms of having this power to change laws all by itself, but it's still this continued reliance on these non-legislative bodies to make big legislative decisions.
Plausible deniability,
yes,
I think,
that's
the phrase.
That's a popular
right?
political term. another big, there was legislation introduced. The legislation got introduced very late on Tuesday, so we all got the pitch, but then sort of the details didn't come out until fairly late in the evening. But what we learned about there was the kind of blueprint for the legalization of recreational adult use marijuana. which the governor has said he wants to do in the budget. He said he recognizes now that if we wait until the end of the session, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it was substantial. It was over 200 pages long. I read most of it. And it is more than a blueprint. It's pretty specific. But once again, to Bill's point, a lot of the big decisions about this, about, you know, who's going to get these licenses, how many licenses there's going to be, where the revenue is going to go, that's going to fall to this cannabis, I forget the actual name, it's like some cannabis kind of oversight committee that will be built into the Alcohol and Beverage Control Department. So once again, there will be a lot of decisions coming down the pike that we don't actually know the context of. That being said, there's a lot in the bill itself that explains, you know, what a social equity applicant will look like, who will be able to use it, what sort of criminal penalties will still be extant for, you know, violating things like age requirements, no one under the age of 21. Also, smoking in public is not going to be allowed. So there was enough kind of meat on the bone of that bill to kind of make for some good chewing.
And we've talked about marijuana even this point last year. There was a possibility it would get done in the budget. There was a possibility it would get done last June, but it's never quite been there. But there does seem to be a sense this session that there has been. I think just the idea has sat with people long enough. They've seen enough other states, and we do seem to be in a different place now than we were even 7-8 months ago. And we saw yesterday Senator Pete Harkin, a moderate from Westchester, announced that he was coming out in favor of it, which kind of gives it a majority in both houses, it seems. Siena earlier this week released a poll where the issue of marijuana legalization for years, every poll, it's been like 53, 54, 55%, where it's constantly, I've never seen one issue stay so static in polls by any polling firm for so many years in a row. But this time it ticked up to 58%, which isn't a lot. That could be a rounding error. It could just be a glitch. But the fact that it's the highest it's ever been after this issue's been pulled on dozens of times seems like a sign that people are more willing to accept this and the idea has settled enough where it's not some outlandish idea that we're jumping to the vanguard of something that's reversing decades of policy.
Nice use of highest there. I really appreciate that. Moving on to some other issues, literally just minutes before the governor began delivering his budget proposal, word came down that the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, federal court, had thrown out three of the seven convictions, the counts against Sheldon Silver, former Assembly Speaker, but had upheld four of them, which means basically he's going to go back for a resentence.
Well, you know, it's been 4+ years since.
It's been almost 5 years. It was 5 years on Wednesday, 2015 to 2020.
That he was arrested, right?
Yes, that he was arrested.
He's actually been convicted for over four
years.
You're
right. So, you're right. Good point.
Time flies when you're not having fun.
Yeah.
I joked with someone. I said, "Do you think he'll, you know, get credit for time not served?" but, you know, this does kind of seem to be the end of the line. I think that he will probably appeal on the three. I think there's three honest services charges still facing him. But I think the one that's most significant is this money laundering thing that was upheld, and I don't think the Supreme Court's going to say, "Well, money laundering is a open, you know, legal question." I think he's in trouble on that one. And so he may actually end up reporting to jail, as, of course, Dean Skelos did and other kind of criminals from the Capitol. But as we know, Shelley is never out of options or tricks, so we shall see, I suppose.
Yeah.
And we saw when he was first sentenced, I believe he was sentenced to 12 years back over 4 years ago. But after his first appeals won and he was retried and found guilty again, I think it was 7 years he was sentenced to, because
Correct.
The judge said he's showing signs of an increased age, so 12 years might be a little bit harsh. We're now getting a couple of years past that point, and by the time he actually gets this third sentencing, he might have even more of a ground to stand on. So we shouldn't be surprised if this original sentencing of 12 years winds up being very short, shorter than the 7 years we've seen. We should not expect him to do a very lengthy prison stint.
Speaking of short tenures, Andy Byford at the New York City Transit Authority is out after 2 years, apparently because of interpersonal friction with a senior state official, meaning Governor Cuomo.
Well, everyone's denying that, and it reminds me of all the relationships in my life. It's not you, it's me. They seem to all be kind of like, well, no, it was just my own personal decision. I was going through things or things that I had to deal with, etc. But this did not seem to be a personal perfect fit. But Andy Byford had said on several previous occasions, I'm out of here, and then had to be kind of begged to come back or to stay in his job. But I do think the reduced amount of responsibilities, which was engineered by Governor Cuomo, really kind of chafed at Andy Byford's kind of not maybe his pride, but maybe also just his professional ambition. You know, he was brought in to fix the subways. The subways seemed to be getting better. There seemed to be kind of ongoing interference. And now he's gone. And I think the most telling quote yesterday was when Governor Cuomo was asked about this. And he said, well, you know, he was there for 2 years. You know, not everyone stays in these jobs for a lifetime. And the governor himself, who has been there for 9+ years in his job, kind of did not see the irony in that statement whatsoever. But anyhow, I think for New York City, it's, you know, the way it was responded to was, you know, this is a disaster. The subways are starting to get better, and now the man responsible for those improvements is leaving.
All right. That, unfortunately, is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much for the good analysis from Jesse McKinley of The New York Times and Bill Mahoney of Politico.
To learn more about what we covered on tonight's show, head over to New York Now's website at nynow.org. Until then, I'm Dan Clark. Thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.